This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR. If you're enjoying this podcast in Manawatu, you could make your very own, just like this one. MPR exists to help people like you tell your story or share your passion on air and online. Check out mpr.nz for more information.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us...
Anne Weir.
Iola Hegarty.
And I'm Stuart Burks. Okay, now, Anne, last week we were talking about your early life and training and so on. You were made redundant and around the same time had a marriage breakup, went back to university and came out with an MBA. So a new phase of your life.
Yes. And at the conclusion of my MBA, I was actually asked to apply for a position at Massey University, which I did. Mm-hmm. And that started a 30-year career at Massey with a variety of positions, primarily in administration.
Okay. But so you went straight into admin?
No, I spent my first year as an academic.
Yes.
In accountancy, but it was only a half-time role.
Okay. Yeah.
And by that stage, my family, I needed a full-time job to support my son, particularly okay. through university.
So, because you had all the teaching skills and teaching experience, but they didn't have a full-time post. So, did you regret moving out of teaching?
I always felt that teaching would have been was a natural place for me.
Mm.
I enjoyed teaching. I enjoyed seeing students succeed, and I believe I was able to help students succeed.
Yeah, and did you think your teaching experience helped you as an administrator in a teaching institution?
It probably gave me. I'll use the word empathy, but that sounds a wee bit belittling. Mm. With my colleagues who were academics, I could understand where they were coming from in a lot of situations. So I think it probably gave me a breadth of experience to be able to support people.
Yeah, and having done some school teaching and then some experience at university teaching, did you notice much of a difference?
In what way?
Was it a different experience? I suppose you're interacting more with school children than in university? Or
I probably took my primary school experience into the university classroom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really think fundamentally there was much difference in the way people learnt. It was only the content and their level of sophistication.
Okay, yeah. One thing I did find, because I did some sort of involvement in primary schools when my young children were at school, and I did notice I could be in a primary school and you get the rewards all the time. You can see a child picking up a new thing very quickly, and then you go and give a two-hour lecture to postgraduate students trying to put across a complex concept, and you're just not getting the same immediate light bulb moments from the students.
Probably not, probably because the student at that level is less likely to be demonstrative, possibly because they don't want to show themselves up in front of their classmates. They don't want to be different.
Yeah.
Whereas a primary school child can show absolute delight when they find
Maybe
something.
The concepts are more complex as well, so it needs...
I agree with that. But where you can see a child learning a new school and absolute delight with it, whereas I think as an adult is not going to show, even if they've got it inside them, they're not going to display it in the same way.
Yeah. There's also... I don't want to digress too far, but there is the I recall as studying in England there was the general concept, don't expect to understand a lecture when you go into the lecture. If it is, then it's too simple. What the lecturer is doing is helping you to understand how to approach the course material to understand it. So you've got the lecture and then all the extra work that you do later to get there. But we've moved more and more, I found, with university students of wanting the material there straight away without necessarily needing the extra input. But,
yeah. I guess for me, being in front of with students is such a long time ago now that I wouldn't have any recent experience to be able to really comment.
Yeah, okay, no. That's fine. So you got into administration.
Yes.
Was that fun?
I suppose it depends a little on your definition of fun. Because I worked in such a variety of different roles as well during that time.
Such as?
I managed the extramural production area where putting... thousands and thousands of pages through a printery, organising
study guides, material, content.
Yeah. So I did that part of it. I also worked in the area in college, supporting students in planning their what courses they were going to take and helping them with that. So to a certain extent, I felt that reflected some of the a teacher type activity.
Okay, yep.
And then when Massey University started working on new student management systems, also thinking the work I was doing with the Massey regulations into the student management system, I guess from my perspective it was always what we were going to display was going to make it the easiest and best from a student perspective.
Okay. So, okay. Now, you raise an interesting issue there, being involved in the extramural material production, because Massey, unusually at that time, was a distance university as well as internal, with far more courses than the Open University in the UK.
Yeah.
But I found, just as an academic at Massey, you pick up a lot of skills as to how to prepare a course for distance and teaching distance. And now with things like COVID and other situations where people in other universities had that issue, you see their material and you suddenly realize the extent of the expertise that Massey had accumulated. So you would have seen that directly from internally.
Yes, yeah, I did. However, that was probably in the first third of my career at Massey that I did that. So, yeah, I moved on from there as well. But I certainly recognised that Massey had a depth of expertise.
So what did you see in that? Your input and the nature of the process and the product?
I managed the process. I wasn't directly involved with the with supporting lecturers with the content. I managed the production of the printed material and also the team of operators who put.
So I saw printing and distribution and so on.
Yes. There were other colleagues who were directly involved in the teaching content.
Okay. So so are we talking about what period now? The 1980s?
Or? No. I started Massey in 1992. So it was from 1993 through to 2002.
Okay. Yeah. So, and at that stage, it was nearly all printed material that was posted out?
It was mainly printed. Yeah. It started to become some online support, but the majority of the material was actually hard copy printed.
So it's actually an all done at Massey Printery?
Yes, it was.
Yeah. So it's actually a massive operation, given the number of course amount of material.
It was. I think at one stage we calculated that the amount of printed material per annum was enough to fill a 3-bedroom house from floor to ceiling.
Yeah, I can believe that.
Yes.
Yes. Okay, and there was also develop. I remember over time the design side of it. The when I arrived in the late 70s, and the study material that went out then was fairly basic in the production. But after some time, it was partly computerized the design and layout, and the whole quality and image of the presentation was greatly improved. So you had a design unit.
Yes, there was a design unit was associated with it. Mm. Often, lecturers came up with their concept because there were images like cover images and things like that were used. Mm. Often, they would come up with an idea, and that would be translated. Yeah, but yes, I think the advent of the ring binder too was pretty. Because that was introduced during my time there as well. Yeah. So, yes.
And as well with the printing facilities as well, they could expand more with more readings going in and so on.
Yeah.
Right?
And so it was able then to be staggered. So it wasn't necessarily all study material given to the student at the start of the course. It was able to be phased throughout the duration of the course.
So did it change much during your time there?
Yes, I think what did change was looking at the amount of material that was sent out, as to whether it was necessary to have so many readings given to students. Yes, we were talking of distance, but the library still ran a fairly sophisticated service in terms of being able to supply books and things like that for students. They didn't necessarily have to have everything handed to them up front.
So early on there was more content and later there was less?
Yes, it was rationalised and to have... I think at one point there were some courses where students were getting up to three very large ring binders of material. And so we looked at rationalising the amount of material we sent.
Yeah, and there'd have been copyright issues with publishers as well, weren't there? Special arrangements to publish sort of chapters from books and so on.
Which
increased over time, I think.
Yes, it did.
Yeah, okay. Were you involved in the assessment side as well?
Only to the extent of being responsible for the... assignments being the team who accepted the assignments and sent them out, but not actually the assessment per se. The teaching consultants were the same with the content of the material as well as the assessment.
Okay, so
enjoyed it.
Excellent. You enjoyed it.
Yep.
It was good fun.
Yep.
And lots of contact with lecturers and so on. What about deadlines? Because I seem to remember them creeping further. Yeah, if people aren't delivering on time, we'll make the deadline a month earlier, and then we'll make it a month earlier than that. And in the end, you think this is ridiculous, and you just don't deliver, and then they...
There was a production schedule in which... teaching departments had to decide which of their courses were going to be delivered over a period of time. Obviously, the both printing and any word processing that had to be done couldn't all be done with a click of a finger. It had had to be spread over some months to get it done. And so it was, I think, contrary to some understanding, the scheduling was not done by me or my team. It was actually done by the departments themselves, but it had to be staggered. So it was the responsibility of the head of department or administrators to determine who was the person who drew the short straw and had to provide the material at the earliest date. Yeah.
What about exam papers then?
Exam papers was actually dealt with. I also ended up organising that team as well, but the production of the exam papers was done slightly slightly differently.
Differently, yeah, because there were occasions where you're teaching a new course and before you've covered any of the material, you still have to get the questions ready for the students. But, given, do you recall the number of courses and or number of exams you were dealing with? Because it was massive.
It was huge. Sorry, I don't have the stats at my fingertips.
Because for the exams as well, there's all the, with distant students, there's exam centres all over the world.
I can remember one particular time having a student getting very concerned that they might be selected for a New Zealand team and therefore they wouldn't be able to sit their exam in Auckland as planned. It so happened that particular instance, and I was well aware of it, that there was a person travelling with the team who happened to be a Massey staff member who offered to actually supervise the exam.
Now, what about time zones with exams? If someone's, say, in the UK with an 11 or 13 hour time difference and there's an exam to be taken on a certain day, they're sworn to confidentiality.
There was confidentiality that, sorry, I probably haven't got the exact details of how they managed it, but I do, it was. It had been the examinations had actually been, because the extramural had been going for a very long time at Massey, that exam zones had been managed pretty much for years, I think.
So as long as you don't know a student who's already taken the exam, it'll tell you the question too.
I think most students were aware that they didn't.
They shouldn't disclose it. I suppose the problem would be if you got, well, once there's email and then students just discuss an exam afterwards and there's other students in the circuit. Okay, so we got extramural stuff and other things you were doing?
Later on, well, when I went into college, I did, as it were, a lot of student contact.
Which college?
I was in the College of Business.
Okay.
It was one, I'll just recount one episode that was really lovely. This wonderful international student, because there were a lot of international students through when I started in particular, turned up wearing a most amazing, her clothes were just beautiful. And I commented on them, and she said, oh, she designed them herself. And she said, yes, she said, I really wanted to be a clothing designer. But my parents said I had to do accountancy. And I sort of thought, there she is looking, I mean, obviously would have been a very successful clothing designer.
And she built up the right skills to run a business so she could do the design.
At this point, she was struggling with her accountancy. And that's why she'd come to me, because she was...
That seemed to have, for me, as a postgraduate at the LSE, there was a female Iranian student on the same course, and this was sort of mathematical economics and econometrics, and she said really what she wanted was to have her own dress shop. But women should be doing all these things that men have been doing because it's so much better, maybe. There was a strong pressure, wasn't there, I suppose, on women as to what they should be doing.
Well, there was actually strong pressure on, I found there was one young lad who also...
International, you mean?
No, not an international local. A Kiwi boy who was struggling.
For boys, the idea you've got to go into a profession or something that would support a family, that's... always been there. But I think for girls with the idea they should go into university, they should have these options, there was a strong pressure in certain areas they should go into, I think. Maybe not.
I've never ever felt
no
that.
You chose it because you liked maths yourself, you said.
Looking back, maths, I was definitely, being female, I was a minority in mathematics.
Yes,
but Science, not so much. The science wasn't quite as marked, the difference between. So I think...
What, you mean there were more women in science?
Not more, but it wasn't... I mean, I was a very distinct, definite minority in mathematics. But it wasn't so obvious. There was no real... I didn't see such a difference in sciences.
Okay. So within sciences, was there a difference, say, between, say, the biological sciences and the physical sciences?
I stayed mainly in the more biological. I didn't actually look at physics at university. So and at that in the 60s, I think there was I recall that vet became a very popular occupation for females.
Yes, yeah, or even more so now. Yeah.
Yes. Obviously, you've got that.
Yes. Okay. Does that mean that now there's a lot of talk about STEM courses and getting more girls and women into STEM courses? Do you have an opinion on that? Do you think there should be some push, or just go by the natural inclinations? Or?
I think from what I've seen, and I worked with someone who was very much in that area. That there's always been the reason it's been is because it appeared, and there's probably a bit of hearsay, women being discouraged from attempting. So this is to turn around.
Okay.
So,
but you didn't feel that yourself.
I never ever felt myself that I was either pressured to or not. Either way, I wasn't actually aware of any reason why I couldn't be successful, or why I needed to be pushed to be successful.
Because certainly the current the thing put across publicly is that more has to be done to get women in. But whether that's because it's justified or it's a policy objective of certain groups, it's probably hard to say, I suppose.
I think it's a bit hard to say. It's a bit like chicken and the egg, isn't it? Is it women aren't taking these subjects up because they're being discouraged, or
at the moment there's the idea that the desirable outcome is equality and all sorts of things. They're not talking about equality in coal miners and sort of drain layers and nursing and so on. But there's in certain areas they say that there should be more women in there because they're underrepresented, which is there's some underlying principle there, I suppose. I'm not sure what it is.
I always felt, but perhaps I'm wrong, that the reason was that they were underrepresented because they'd been discouraged rather than encouraged. So this is trying to reverse that one.
You've not observed them being discouraged, but that is as it's presented, or
well, that's or, I've, so that that's the impression I've had that up until this with the STEM encouraging, now it was because they had been actively discouraged, which was why it's now was needed to encourage.
So
I would agree with you.
Same.
I would agree that there's more been discouragement, and like most parents of my parents' generation certainly wanted to see their daughters have a career which had status and other things. So I think if I'd said that I just wanted to be a typist in a typing pool or something like that, it would not have been...
But is that the same? So your parents encouraged you, and you say probably parents encouraged girls to do things, but... It said that girls weren't encouraged into the sciences, for example. Or
they were discouraged from.
It is said that, yes. Mm. But is that just something that was said? Because neither of you actually experienced that.
No.
Yeah, is it just the current political view or the reality. Hard to say.
I think, like Anne, I had to go to the boys' school for physics and chemistry.
Yes.
Because it wasn't offered at my all-girls school.
Okay.
So
maybe, and that's where there's the question: is it because not enough wanted the subject, or?
And I think it's both, because when I thought about it, in my final year of the, you know, there were only three girls who did physics.
Mm. Yes. Yeah.
And perhaps I can't remember the exact number in chemistry, but it was probably only about five. Wouldn't have been more than. Yeah. Five or six.
Yeah. I suppose the same thing about limitations for boys of going in areas that wouldn't give them a decent income and so on. You know, like you should, some of the art and music and so on, they say, well, you won't support a family with that. You should do accounting or law or medicine or something, probably.
I mean, my son did an arts degree.
Arts degree is a bit different from art or music and so on.
History.
Okay. So now, do we have another one or two steps after that, or you worked at Mercy and then retired?
Yes, basically.
And were you pleased to? What about the decision to retire? Because you didn't.
I wanted to reach 30 years.
Yes.
Which I did.
That for the pension or just a goal?
No, it was. I was still feeling well. Mm. I wanted to retire when I was still well.
Yes.
I wanted to reach the 30-year goal just because it became a goal.
Yes. Okay.
And I was ready to indulge my passion for making chutneys.
Gardens. You had things you wanted to move on to and enjoy. Which is a good way to be, to have things to look forward to rather than just your identity is so tied up in your work that you can't see beyond that.
And I had already made sure that I was, cooking had always been a passion right from for a very long time anyway.
Very good. And retirement's enjoyable.
Yep, totally.
Very good. Okay. Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
If you enjoy this NPR podcast, please consider subscribing. Our podcasts are available on all major podcasting platforms: Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify, as well as the accessmedia.nz app. Support this show and others like it by giving a donation. For more information, go to www.npr.nz/donate.